Welcome back, WNST, Taos of Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a very, very short week of football. Thursday night, the Ravens will be traveling off to Tampa to take on the woeful Tom Brady Buccaneers, at least on Sunday for a day in Carolina. They stunk. The Ravens, I don't know if they stunk on Sunday, but certainly survived in beating the Cleveland Browns. Luke Jones is here to discuss all things offense. We discussed defense in another segment and the age and bringing guys in, but the Gus Edwards show and running the football and Mark Andrews not getting the ball and Rashad Bateman getting back out onto the field and Ronnie Stanley looking like maybe he's in better shape than J.K. Dobbins is at this point in regard to will he be there a week from now, a month from now. Luke, this is a nice little test on Thursday night on the backside of Tom Brady stinking on Sunday and all the drama going on around the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Decent time to be going down there, but everybody's going to be tired. It's Thursday night football.
Yeah, and it's everyone feels a little mediocre too, right? I mean, it's the nature of the league right now. Other than Buffalo, who was able to put their feet up and kind of observe, certainly have to look at Kansas City, how impressive they were against San Francisco. The Eagles on a bye week.
I was going to say, the Eagles have already won the Super Bowl. They've already greased the poles. They're just going to leave them greased, I think is what they're going to do.
Buffalo is better than Philadelphia. But your point is well taken in terms of another team that is looking, you know, very good. But the rest of the league, it's a lot like the Ravens right now. You have some games where you say, all right, that looks more like it. And then other games where you scratch your head. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a team that's certainly of late been more bad than good, even before Sunday stinker against Carolina. So we'll see how that plays out. But for the Ravens, in looking at this game and looking at them moving forward, knowing that J.K. Dobbins is on the shelf, at least for the next four games, as he gets the knee scoped and we'll see what happens there. I think when you're talking about having an in-season procedure, and I know John Harbaugh talked about it after the game and, you know, talked about this being Dobbins' call to hopefully improve his range of motion a little bit with some of the scar tissue. And I'm not going to dismiss that possibility, but I also look at it and say, well, we're almost to November and he's having his knee scope this week and he's going to be out at least a month there. I mean, we're talking most likely December. At that point, where is he going to be physically? Where is the rest of this running game going to be at that point? And that's where we come back to Gus Edwards making his 2022 debut on Sunday afternoon and looking not peak Gus Edwards, but looking like Gus Edwards for the most part, right? I mean, the thing that you like about him that is a little bit different is he's at the very least not someone who's going to lose yardage very often. And I know he was stopped for no gain and 1 yard on a couple occasions on Sunday.
You have to tackle him. I mean, he's a man. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So you look at how the faces have changed since the Ravens made the switch from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson halfway through the 2018 season. Of course, Lamar is the anchor, right? Everything they do is still based off of at least the threat of Lamar Jackson running the football. But beyond that, over the previous 3 years before the ACL injury, days before the 2021 opener, Gus Edwards had been the constant, right? In 2018, remember, they still had Alex Collins and they had Ty Montgomery and they had Kenneth Dixon. Well, Gus Edwards really emerged to kind of be the
man.
The,
you
the
are lead. Mentioning names that everyone in my audience has forgotten about.
Well, but it just speaks to how Gus, for those 3 years where he eclipsed 700 rushing yards and averaged at least 5 yards a carry, he had been a constant there. Not as much as Lamar Jackson, because we know Lamar's running for 1,000-plus yards every year when he's healthy, but he's been such a constant. He was such an important part of that running game that they lacked last year. So to get him back to be in that position where you can rely on him on some of those short yardage situations, on goal line situations, as we saw on two occasions where he found the end zone on Sunday, it's encouraging. Now, with this, we have to ask the same questions about him that we did about J.K. Dobbins and continue to do with Dobbins. How's he going to respond? Not just Thursday night, but continuing as we get deeper into the season. And I always thought from a standpoint of Edwards being a little more of a north-south runner, to say the least, that probably helps him. But at the same time, you still have to cut. You still have to change direction. You still have to be able to bear that workload week after week after week. And that's not to say that he's going to carry it 16 times every single week, because we know that this run game will vary game to game, even when it's at its peak form. But you do wonder how that's going to look, because even just a couple weeks ago, what were we saying about J.K. Dobbins? He was starting to look like J.K. Dobbins, right? We saw, you know, that he had the great run that he turned nothing into a really impressive gain against the Bengals and was starting to look like maybe he was right or close to being right. And then we found out a week later, you know, and sure, the turf at MetLife probably didn't help matters, but it's a conversation they had been having already because Dobbins has been so impatient, you know, by his own admission, to try to get back to being pre-injury.
Well, he's playing for money, right? I mean, it's a whole different thing for him.
Oh, no doubt. Well, any running back, if there's one position where I can empathize and understand that, and, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, maybe he could go about it a little bit differently and all that, but you can understand it at the running back position. It's such a brief shelf life. So, you know, Gus Edwards had gotten the extension from the Ravens, albeit a modest one. You know, it's not crazy money, but solid money for a complimentary running back, which is what he's been for the most part. He's very rarely been, quote, the guy, but certainly been an important guy for this Ravens running game. So how does he look this week against the Bucs? You know, how did the Ravens manage his workload? You know, you look at how the carries broke down. He only carried the ball six times in the second half. And I know some fans were, understandably so, wondering why Gus Edwards wasn't carrying the ball late. I think they're trying to take care of him. I mean, it's just the reality of where they've been with some of these players, and Dobbins was a great example of this. So,
well, they also did that on the O-line, right? I mean, when Stanley and McCary were in there and Moses was out. I mean, John knew he had to play on Thursday, talked about it before the game, which is kind of unusual. That and all of these injuries and all of the mess and all of the age and all of the insertion of DeSean Jackson and Ajabo Bowser whenever those guys come back. But how about, you know, JPP wasn't on the team 4 weeks ago, or, you know, or Justin Houston, who hadn't played in a couple of weeks. I mean, they have real, I mean, we talk about Peters and Humphrey. Well, Humphrey's different, his upper body, but all of these guys with below the waist injuries playing two games on turf, 4 days apart, going down to Tampa. This is, John knew about this from the beginning when you talk about load management, which was the word of the week, I think, right? Words of the week.
Yeah, well, and it's not just these current weeks. It's a 17-game schedule, right? It's a marathon, not a sprint. You have those times where you want to sprint within the midst of a football game to hold on to a lead, right? Which we know that they've had their issues doing, to say the least. But you are trying to keep these guys healthy and upright and thriving. And we said it throughout the offseason. This is why I kept stressing that there's a difference between being good enough to play and healthy enough to thrive. And I think, you know, in the case of J.K. Dobbins, that was just one example here. And I'm not dismissing his chances to come back and contribute and play at a high level come December and hopefully into January. But it's tough. I mean, these are difficult injuries to come back from. As you mentioned, it's one thing to talk about, like Humphrey was a great example. Torn pec, takes him out for the rest of the season, last December, but not something that's going to linger and impact the rest of your career. These ACL injuries or these Achilles injuries are devastating injuries. Not to say that you can't come back and play, but there's no guarantee that you're going to come back and be that same guy. It's why, you know, a great example was a guy that we saw come out of the tunnel before Sunday's game. Ladarius Webb is one of my favorite examples there. That was a guy who looked like he was on a path to becoming a Pro Bowl corner until his unfortunate second ACL injury in a four-year span back in that Super Bowl season. Remember, Webb did not make it to December and January and New Orleans in early February. He came back. He played another 5 years. He's never the same player he had been before that. So it's not to say that these guys won't do that, but what we're seeing right now, what we'll see post-bye week and getting deeper into the season, there is going to be some of that. That's why the Ravens give so many of their veteran players a day off practice here and there. I mean, you have to do that, and you do have to manage their snaps. Now, you want to do it in a way where they're available late in the game, and I think Sunday was, you know, kind of that exception for Gus Edwards. I would assume moving forward, he's going to be out there in the fourth quarter when it's a close game. But his first game back, I think it was pretty evident they were trying to kind of get They used him pretty heavily in the first half. You know, he had 10 carries. Then he carried the ball six times in the second half. So I think they were trying to manage that as much as they can. But at the same time, he's out there. You want to use him. You want to use him effectively, especially in a game like that, that, let's face it, was not the most aesthetically pleasing, was not pretty from a passing game standpoint. So, yeah. And it certainly didn't help that Kenyon Drake did not have the same, you know, the Ravens weren't clearing running lanes for him in the way they did against the Giants the week before. So,
well, then, and then he'll fumble the football, right? I mean, you know, then the fatal
Justice Hill,
happens.
Right?
Yeah, the fatal Justice. Flaw happens on the carry to sure. say where would that's where you want Dobbins to have the ball in a perfect world, right? That's where Gus Edwards, if he didn't have a load management issue in 16 carries, first time back in 600 and however many days it's been, that you would have a different situation in the fourth quarter. That's Gus Edwards' ball, right? Fourth quarter, late in the game, that's his job. That wasn't his job on Sunday.
Right. But I would also remind everyone, prior to his hamstring injury against Buffalo, Justice Hill had been their most explosive running back. So I think we also need to look at this reasonably in understanding that even pre-injury, Gus Edwards, were there a few occasions here or there where he might carry the ball to 20 plus times? Sure. Was that the norm? No. I mean, this has always been much more of a timeshare kind of backfield. And with J.K. Dobbins on IR right now, but clearly whenever he comes back is not going to be having that Pro Bowl, take a major step forward kind of season that everyone thought he would prior to the injury last year, this is going to be a timeshare backfield. So certainly the situations call for Gus Edwards to carry the load a little bit more. I think you'll see that moving forward, but you also had to manage and be reasonable with him. And they're going to have to be reasonable with him at least for the next few weeks. Keep in mind, and he confirmed this after the game, ACL, LCL, hamstring tear for Gus Edwards. Similar injury. Dobbins had the same thing, other than Dobbins had a meniscus tear as well. So these weren't your clear cut, typically, where you say, okay, ACL and MCL, right? Where bad injury, but usually fairly clean coming back from that. When you're starting to talk about some of these other ligaments in the knee, in addition to the ACL, that's tricky. That's why we didn't see Gus Edwards week one. And that's why, if you recall, going back to the beginning of training camp, for the Ravens at that point in time to say that Gus Edwards was in doubt for week one, that told you that this is a pretty significant injury that he's coming back from. So not to say that he won't have a hiccup to the degree of Dobbins, where, you know, he gets the knee scoped and is back on IR. But that's where I think you need to remember they're trying to balance winning Sunday's game, you know, in the moment, trying to win the game in which you're playing at that moment in time, but also understanding that you've got 10 more games to go after that, and you hope more games after that. So that's always the challenge when you're talking about these guys coming back from injury. It's really the challenge with everyone, but specifically guys coming back from major injury and guys on the wrong side of 30, which, you know, as we talked about, you know, edge rusher being a key position. You know, Marcus Peters, you know, we saw him have some struggles on Sunday, but you know how important he is. He hasn't been practicing very much the last couple of weeks because I think they're just trying to really take care of him as much as they can. So it's a fine balance. And I understand frustration and questions when certain individuals might not be out there at a certain point in the game, but we also understand that you're trying to manage the big picture too. So that's where it's going to be interesting to see how this looks moving forward. And that's why it's so important to have depth. And that's why, you know, as we mentioned in a previous conversation with edge rusher, you know, they're at a position now where Justin Houston's back, Tyus Bowser is going to be back, David Ajabo is going to be in the picture. So, you know, you really are in a position where hopefully you can spread that workload around a little bit more in hopes of having all these guys available and effective late in the season. So big step for Gus Edwards on Sunday, coming back and playing for the first time in what, nearly 14 months and, you know, 2 years, if we're talking just regular season action. So it's great to get him back. And I think you saw that really pay off. And even though he wasn't always the one carrying it in some of those short yardage situations, but have to point out the Browns outgained the Ravens in this game, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, they averaged 6 yards a play. The Ravens averaged 4 yards per play. But where was a big difference in the game? The Ravens, 7 of 15 on third down, 2 of 2 on fourth down. and Gus Edwards was a major factor. They did some other things, and credit Greg Roman on a couple occasions for some creative calls in some of those short yardage situations. As much as people want to beat him up, let's give him his props when they're deserved. But they did a really good job in that regard, and the Browns didn't do a good job on third down, and that really was a big difference in this football game on Sunday.
Well, certainly Greg Roman can get a little bit gadgety. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. I'd like to say he's out in Owings Mills all week, but he's not, because Thursday night they're playing football and they're not even in Owings Mills as they get ready for all this stuff. Luke, I wrote a column this about the running game and about Lamar and run first, run second, run third. You made sort of a flippant comment that 9 out of 16 isn't going to get it done. That's not the way they're going to win. I don't know. They won. I think 45 passes probably isn't the way to get it done. I don't know where the balance is that when it's available, but when they're winning and this is going to go right, it's going to be because they kick the ball off at the beginning of the game and they start running and they run well, and then they don't have to do anything other than run well. Once they run well, they win. That's 2019. I'm not saying it's going to be that road grader thing. And it was nice to see Marshall Yanda back and those guys from the 19, but I still think their identity is in running the ball. Their drafting is in running the ball. Their whole strategy in thinking about Lamar over the last 4 years has been offensive linemen that run the ball, committee backfield that runs the ball. Oh, and we'll have some skill position players that'll be nice too. But as I've said in all these off seasons, they really don't want to throw the ball much. Not that Mark Andrews should be a zero or Bateman should get four balls or that they shouldn't get Duvernay more involved in this, but they are not a passing team. And when they try to be, they do it at their own peril. When they run and run well early, see Gus Edwards, they're in good down in distances that are running down in distances because they're in second and two and second and three, that they prosper. That's not sexy. That's not the NFL. That's more like what Army and Navy do to be sexy. But when they run and it works, they don't have to do anything else. It makes it nice when they can, and it makes Lamar much more of a factor, I think, getting one-on-one on the outside, because Lamar throws it better than you think he does. But they don't pass protect as well as they run block, and they're not built to do it. Ronnie Stanley, none of these guys on the offensive line are truly pass protectors that other teams would have drafted to protect Joe Burrow in a passing game. And they have a nice running game in Cincinnati too. You want to be complimentary, but I always think of this as run it, run it, run it. And if that fails, then try to throw it, but try to run it. You have to run it. It's what you do.
I agree to a point. I think they need to be much better passing the football than they've been the last few weeks. The formula Sunday is not beating teams of high quality in this league. And perfect example is they barely won the football game on Sunday. You know, it's not as though they won by four touchdowns.
Well, they needed a phantom snap because sure. I'm still waiting to see who on Cleveland jumped.
Yeah. They didn't. I mean, believe me, I hear what you're saying, Nestor. And I want to be clear. I agree with you that throwing it 45 times is not the formula. That's not the formula for most teams. In fact, I think you would find maybe other than Kansas City. I don't even know about Buffalo. I feel, and I think this is where we sometimes lose sight of what a running game, a great running game is really worth in today's game. It is much more for me. It's not about the first quarter and the second quarter. It's about the third quarter and the fourth quarter. And I think even if you go back to 2019, keep in mind, Lamar Jackson led the league in touchdown passes that year. The formula on Sunday was not what 2019 really was most of the time. In fact, I think this might be his only second career start where he didn't have double-digit completed passes. So it does speak to how, you know, this was kind of outside the norm even for, you know, go back to a couple years ago from what they absolutely did best. And I think if you go back and look at those games, they were much more balanced in the first half in terms of run pass. But the key, and this is where we go back to what has this team really struggled with this year? Well, they've had a double digit lead in all seven of their games, right? So they've clearly been doing something right over the course of 60 minutes. Now, they haven't played a full 60 minutes consistently enough. We know that's evident, but they clearly have been in those positions. I think what I saw on Sunday that really encouraged me, late fumble aside, was they were able to chew the clock and run the clock and run the ball on that drive until Justice Hill's fumble. That was kind of the ideal drive, right? That was what they hadn't been able to do in some of their previous games. So for me, it's not even so much that you have to go out there and run the ball 20 times in the first half. For me, it's go out there, do what you need to do, you know, and certainly be, you want balance. I'm not at all saying Lamar going out there and throwing the ball 30 times in the first half, but go out there, score points, build a lead, and then you can really unleash that running game in the second half. And anyone will tell you, because you know, for years, we always loved citing these statistics that this team has this record when they run for over 100 yards, when in reality, they were often winning those games because they could run late because they had a lead. And that's really where it boils down to that. So 9 of 16 for 120 yards is not going to win against. That's not winning in January. It's just not. But that said, Sunday's game, AFC North, as we talked about at length, team that was beat up, knowing they had a quick turnaround. They knew their opponent, the Cleveland Browns, had really struggled to stop the run. I'm completely fine with that, with their game plan on Sunday. I think it worked. You know, we can quibble and talk about the red zone, which is still not as consistent as you'd like it, or not as consistent as it was the first three games of the season. But they did what they needed to do to win the game. However, I can't sit here and say that what they did Sunday, I feel, is what their identity needs to be moving forward, because I just don't think that's not going to get them over the hump in January. And what I am a little concerned about, and you know, pass protection was part of it. Although I thought their pass protection until this game really had been pretty good this year, you know, especially considering they hadn't had Ronnie Stanley and they've had some guys in and out of the lineup, McCary, for example. But I do look at where Lamar Jackson in this passing game has gone since the first 3 weeks, where we're talking about him as an MVP candidate and he was off to a white hot start throwing the football. That's kind of gone away. And I think the protection was an issue on Sunday at times, no question about it. But I can also tell you there were times where he left throws on the field, or he's looking downfield and there is an instance where take your check down. It's right there. And he didn't do it. And guess what happens? He gets sacked then. So, you know, there's certainly this passing game is a work in progress as it stands right now.
And I think protecting him is a work in progress, right? Can we say that? Protecting him in the passing game when to your point, he can get rid of the ball quicker and stuff like that. But I when I look at this offensive line, I think they run block a lot better than they pass protect. And the more that they try to pass protect, the more they open themselves up to, I don't want to say disaster, but just to not to exposing that they're not great at pass protection. That's my feeling on it. I think they have to do a lot to pass protect. Pat Ricard, they have to bring different guys in to pass protect, to protect. And Lamar's the best at getting out of the pocket and running. He doesn't feel like he wants to do that. Feels like he's been coached a lot. I know he's been coached a lot the last 3 years. Stay in the pocket. Work your reach. Don't just take off. Don't look to run. Look to pass. And I think You feel that and see that when you count one Mississippi, two Mississippi, where he's back in the pocket looking like a pocket quarterback. He didn't look like a pocket quarterback in 19 or 20. He really didn't. It looked like the metal football game where it's fade right, fade left, look, take off if it's available. He doesn't look like he wants to take off, and he's not being coached to take off. He's being coached to throw the football.
Well, and I think this is where I'd be remiss if I didn't mention he was on the injury report at the beginning of the week with a hip issue. Now, he was limited on Wednesday, was full go the final two practices of the week, didn't have a game status designation. I don't think it was a major issue, but was that part of what we saw on Sunday? I think maybe. I think that's plausible. I think their pass protection has been pretty good this year, Sunday notwithstanding, and I'll also remind, very few defenses that they're going to play have Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney coming from the edge. So let's also keep that in mind as well. But your point's well taken. And I would agree, if you're looking at this line in its totality, is it built more so on the pass protection side or run blocking? I think it's built for both, but I think certainly in a big picture sense, yeah, I think you look at it veering a little more towards the run blocking side. Although Stanley, certainly he's been a perfectly good run blocker. Don't get me wrong when he's been at his best, but pass protection has been the reason why the Ravens invested $100 million contract in him to protect your franchise quarterback's blind side. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves. It was good to get Bateman back, you know, did drop a pretty key pass, which, you know, that's still something you want to see more consistency out of him. As much as I had to chuckle a little bit when you see the Ravens sign DeSean Jackson, because it's just like, who didn't see this coming? You know, that they don't have enough wide receiver. It's one thing that I'll continue to bang the drum about. You know, if there's one thing about this organization that frustrates me, it's that position and how they handle themselves. But
when did they get the quarterback $50 million and don't have any money?
Oh, that's why I
well, that's coming. That's the next thing. I mean, you did radio with John Blacko here after 2014, right?
It's not valid though, because it's clear they didn't even spend money even when they had a quarterback on a rookie contract at wide receiver. Anyway, I don't want to get too far into that part of the conversation. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that over and over.
We're going to have 10 days after they win or lose against Tampa.
With DeSean Jackson, I will say this, as much as I very much have my doubts about his durability at this stage of his career, he is someone who, even at age 34 a year ago, albeit it was split with the Rams and then he was let go and caught on with Las Vegas, still showed an ability to win on the outside with his speed. You know, even at age 35, he can still run. My question is going to be, do those hamstrings hold up? You know, do those knees hold up? And that's something I think in recent years you've seen. He did play 16 games last year, but go look at the last 4 or 5, 6 years for him. He has struggled to stay on the field. So they need to get more out of their passing game. There's no question about that. But generally speaking, I agree with your point. And I certainly agree that it's not me saying they're going to go out and throw it 45 times on a weekly basis, and that's going
to
be their
best. Who are they going to throw it to? That would be the question, right?
Mark Andrews, who, crazy that I looked at this. Mark Andrews, first time he's been held without a catch since that Kansas City game in December of his rookie year back in 2018. Just a testament to him, and also probably a reminder that he's banged up this week. For him to miss a couple practices, you know, I think it's going to be so important for this team. Yeah, go down to Tampa. Do everything you can to try to win the football game. You know, let the chips fall how they do, and then take advantage of that mini buy on the backside and know that you have one more game and then your legitimate buy after that. I hope that you can get some of these guys rested up and healthy then for the second half of the season, which, as you pointed out, very advantageous on paper from an opponent's standpoint. There is not a list of juggernauts that the Ravens have to go through at any point. So if they can get a little more consistency on both sides of the ball, this is a team that has the potential to make a run. There's no question about that. So, but first things first, getting ready in a matter of a couple days to go down to Tampa and see if you can keep the Buccaneers in a bad place, which is where they've been really for the last month or so.
Well, the good news for you, you're still credentialed by Chad Steele. You don't get stuck having to watch pregame football all day Sunday like I did. I don't know if you know this or not, but it was National Tight Ends Day over the weekend. The only reason I know it was National Tight Ends Day, so they couldn't stop telling me it was National Tight Ends Day. So on National Tight Ends Day, our tight end didn't catch the ball, for crying out, although it was Isaiah Likely was likely to catch one. Luke is going to be ready for Thursday night. We're all going to be ready for Thursday night. We're getting ready for the World Series as well. At least the Yankees aren't in. You got the Phillies and the Cheaters. Pick a side. Somebody's got to win this one. Phillies Astros reminds me of Jose Cruz and Enos Cabell back in the day. A little bit of old school and 1980 NLCS sort of thoughts out there as well. Maybe they'll bring the old uniforms back for old time's sake. Nolan Ryan will be there. It'll be fun. Also, we got football on Thursday night. Luke's in Owings Mills getting you ready for all that. He is Baltimore Luke. I am Nestor. I'm easily and readily available. I'll be available on Friday at Greenmount Station. We'll be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour up in Hampstead with my pal Chris eating those delicious crab cakes up in Carroll County. Also, next Friday, we'll be in Dundalk at Drug City at the Fountain. It's all brought to you by Maryland Lottery and our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.